Thank you all for coming. This is great. Thank you, Joan, for inviting me. Jimmy, it's a real pleasure, and I'm delighted to be with these terrific other poets. They're just, what a great night. Thank you all. I want to start off with, France has really had some trouble, as we know, some real terrorist difficulty, and I came across a poem yesterday that I wrote a couple years ago, which has unfortunate relevance today. It's called City of Light. I was lucky enough to be in Paris a couple years ago. I did not deserve Paris. Perhaps none of us do. Maybe Napoleon, De Gaulle, Hemingway. An enticingly dangerous city that electrified me into believing I was much better than I am. As triumphant as its arc, grand as any boulevardaire, stopping for brioche and cappuccino, connoisseur enough to savor the Caravaggios at the Louvre, sense the difference between winged victory and a defeated copy. All the while, Paris fed me truffles and sole meuniere that I have not the educated palate to understand beyond a weak little good. Once during the long ago Algerian crisis, I was sightseeing beside the presidential palace. Suddenly, I was walking on air as two French gendarmes lifted under each shoulder and growled, "Forbidden!" I tried Paris again this year in awe and charm once more, walking and pedicabbing to the Champs-Élysées, d'Orsay, dinner at the Seine with the Eiffel towering behind. Paris was a prince of Troy, but only a god could create a city of such light, love, beauty, art, presence which can create a rage in the deserted minds of terrorists who want to destroy a gift marking us as possible angels, even as we may act sometimes like devils. The terrorist bombings taught me none of us deserve Paris, but we must live and die to keep it. This is, thank you. I was also lucky enough, I have a chance to travel a little bit now. I was lucky enough to get to Havana this year, to Cuba, which challenged my conceptions of both Cuba, the United States, and me. So I want to send this out to my friend Heather, who is also a traveler and has been known occasionally to do transgressive things. This is called Only Connect, and the epigraph is an old joke. The representatives at the UN get along fine. It's the translators who hate each other. I thought only governments were keeping various world citizens, peoples apart. The Cuban customs agent asked me if I wanted him not to stamp my passport. Ah, the quick-to-smile people, a billboard-free city, the Malecón, the young dancers who seem to defy the laws of gravity and physiology, the aging masters at the Buena Vista Social Club, the constant refrain of how good the U.S. reconnection would be, all baked in. I was catching a little communism. In Havana, one of the best places to get a fragrant cortado coffee is in the bar at the Nacional Hotel, where now you find more Russians than mafia. His daughter looked like a cast member out of Dr. Zhivago, hair more at home in a Russian wheat field than a famous Cuban bar. He said he taught history and started giving me lessons. Broken English didn't hold him back from arrogantly asserting that Putin had 70% approval and Obama, like the next to last little piggy, had none, or nearly none. He laughed at his transliterated joke. The USA was fragmented, ungovernable, weak, he said. All my carefully learned ideas, college lectures on how Russia had historically occupied the Crimea, how noble the Soviet experiment was, my reading of the motherland's losses at Stalingrad and before, to say nothing of how Russia saved my Cuba, all disappeared like the Russian Third Army before the German Blitzkrieg. Peasants reaped like wheat in those Western Russian fields. Perhaps this professor and his daughter's parents, grandparents, all evaporated from my mind, and all I could remember was Merle Haggard singing, "When you're running down my country, you're walking on the fighting side of me." Wait, there's more. As the dark, rich coffee ran down off his glasses and the waiter separated us, one more of my country's famous descriptions seeped through: ugly American. This is, thank you. You're too kind, thanks. This is a little poem I did, actually starting as an assignment. It's also concerning things that are in the news about gun control, which I have an ambivalent feeling about, as I think you'll see. It scares me a little. Forget the Second Amendment. My father threw my cousin out of our house, not physically, but by yelling enough, because Dad wouldn't have those damn guns in the house, even if they were empty, in gun cases, in the trunk of my cousin's car, in the basement garage. My father knew himself too well. I have acrophobia, cannot stand heights, which my friend Jim pointed out is a fear of my own imagination, what I might do to come down, not just to speed up that descent, but my whole precious life's. I know a guy who got so far as saliva on the barrel. Dad's dead, natural causes. I'm older, stay lower. Praise the Lord, but don't pass any ammunition. This is, thank you. You guys are too kind, thank you. I was over to see the Wei Wei sculpture show over at the Carnegie, and I was very impressed, and I also found out a little about it myself in Chinese astrology. This is called, in Chinese astrology, "I am born under the sign of the snake. Flexible, they say, ancient and enduring. And naturalists will tell you how the forked tongue is really a magnificent sensor to tell temperature and actually smell out the prey of enemies. All in God's great plan, they say." But we all really know what a snake is. Just ask any of my ex-wives. Notice I didn't say ask me about my ex-wives. Okay. This next poem is called Laissez-Faire. We all learned it in economics about how it keeps the economy of capitalist countries rolling right along. This one is Laissez-Faire? There it was, after years of desultory walking through the big estates looking for Will's house. For a while, I thought I could only find it if I got drunk again. And down the driveway where Gil hit the too-close tree, the garage where Trey lay under the tap of beer barrel and let it flow directly into his mouth, the sudsy slosh drowning out Will's father's polite pleas. And beyond that, the bushes, where I cheated on my date, maybe the best high school girlfriend you could have, right there during the party. Now, as then, it's late May, that blessed time of year when exams are done and summer jobs easy, well-paid, carefully annexed by our connected relatives had not yet started. Eight of us in that high school drinking fraternity, three gone now, including Gil, two in jail for securities fraud, but really for a death grip on lounging in million-dollar houses. I made it, staying more modest, dry, low, watching a lot of TV news, fascinated by the terrorists. I know they're bastards and should be waterboarded. I've become an adherent of the spiderweb theory of evil. Shake the center, and you cannot know how far out the tremors will go. Looking and feeling those memories and that heat, Will's house seemed to shimmer like the ongoing ripples of a stone thrown in a pond. And I'd like to finish with a poem. Since I've been talking about good and evil, I thought I'd consult God in this one. This is called Eschatology, which I amazed a teacher in college one time by knowing what it meant. want to amaze me? It's the study of last things. Suppose God is unsure and wants to know how creation worked out. Who better to ask than us? I imagine a purgatory. Hey, this will be taxing and painful work, most suitable for the transgressive. There, the most discerning, the critics among us, will be met as we struggle creakily out of the needles and pins and hot pokers or whatever else makes up our punishments. Yes, he will be a he, with a white beard so as not to shock us, and he will say, as at the exit of a new amusement park, something like, "How was it? How'd you like the ride? Would you take a minute?" Rhetorical, because what else are we going to do? And fill out this brief survey, which of course won't be brief because it was one long trip, and hello, we're in eternity. I'm afraid I don't have time to reproduce all my suggestions for the whole survey here, but some selected possible questions follow. One, you know, the usual demographic stuff. Where were you born? How long did you live? How mean was your mom or dad? Please circle which was meaner. Two, on a scale of 1 to 22,000, with 17,650 being the best you humans could appreciate, how would you rate your life? Three, on the same scale, how would you rate policy number 1297B, the so-called nature red in tooth and claw policy? Note if you've had any personal experience with a policy. No metaphors, please. Four, how'd you like the horse, or the way I filigreed the fall breeze through those trees I think you call maple reds? Thank you.
Thanks, you guys are great. Thank you.